the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Hour number two of Sports Talk begins with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson, and we head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline for a very special guest as he joins us now as a part of the season, and that is the senior director of broadcasting for and play-by-play voice of the Tennessee Titans, who were the last team to get a win this week one of the NFL as they stayed up late in Denver. And good thing, in the final minute, Steven Gostkowski hits the field goal after Ryan Tannehill wins the drive to put him in place. And the Titans get a measure of revenge, didn't score a single point in Denver last year, and they open 1-0 with the 16-14 win. Mike, how are you?
Better. I've slept, so I'm a lot better. sleep thing, that's not a lot of fun, but I tell you, no sleep after a win was a lot better than no sleep after a loss would be.
So you didn't wind up with a middle seat flying coach, did you?
No, I didn't. No, fortunately, there were no middle seats available. We were very thankful for that as well. So the flight stuff was interesting. We got to the airport about 2 o'clock, and then got to our gate about 2:30, and our flight took off at 7:00. And so I worked pretty much that whole time because we had to get back and do a radio show last night. We were writing a TV show that we had to tape, and then, you know, got on the plane and got some pretty good rest coming back, and then head hit the pillow last night and was pretty good sleep. And I hadn't done that in a long time. It'd been a long time since I'd stayed up 24 hours. And in some ways it was kind of invigorating. It was a lot of fun.
Well, again, I don't think there's any question. You said it right from the right out of the bat, and that is it's a lot easier to do something like that when your sails are full with a win. And it was a back-and-forth football game. I don't think there's any question that you talked about, even with the absence of Von Miller, that Denver was going to give him a fight. They did that. But what do you think it meant for the Titans, who have been so good on the road in just closing out opportunities like this, to just see Tannehill pick up essentially where he left off and leading the team to win? You know, for him to throw more than 40 passes, I don't think anybody necessarily saw that coming.
No, that's not the idea, but we did have 34 runs, and that's pretty good balance in NFL terms. When if it's like 55-45 in terms of percentage pass to run, that's still pretty good. What really shocked me is in the emotion of it all, with all the missed kicks and having to win it at the end, you got a real sense that the Titans had done some good things in the second half of the ball game, and had sort of taken over the ball game, and yet the score didn't reflect it. Well, as I went back and really worked through it all, they really did some good stuff. If Gostkowski makes the kicks, the Titans win that ball game 23-14 or 26-14. And you're saying to yourself, okay, really good defense, playing on the road, tough situation, late at night, opening weekend. That's a good win. And statistically, the Titans didn't turn the ball over. They only had 5 penalties in the ball game. For people to call it ugly, they won ugly, they really didn't. What we did is we kicked ugly. That's the real story of the ball game, is that the Titans, I think, were probably a little better than what we thought in the moment when you see 377 yards of total offense and 7 of 16 on third downs after starting 0-3, scoring a touchdown on fourth down. I mean, there were a lot of good things in the ballgame. The kicking thing, though, my goodness, I said on the broadcast, we have been in the Bermuda Triangle of trying to make field goals. And considering that we are just 9 of our last 22, I mean, that's crazy, and obviously has to change soon.
Mike, how nervous were you when Gostkowski lined up for that 25-yarder?
horrified nervous, ready to jump out of the booth nervous. And let me tell you what it really was, honestly. It wasn't so much about the ball game, and it wasn't as much about the win or the loss or making the kick, taking the lead. It was for Gostkowski. I mean, can you imagine if he had missed that kick? I mean, to have it come crashing down as badly as it did. I mean, listen, we're talking about, you guys know this, you're football fans. This has been one of the best kickers in the NFL for years. There's talk that this guy might go to the Hall of Fame someday. He's been so good. And to see him, the first one kind of veered in a strange way. And then, the one that he missed from 42 was like a complete duck hook. I mean, it wasn't even – so I'm sitting there thinking, where is this poor guy right now mentally?
Yeah.
You know, I'm feeling for him as a human being. And, you know, we're going to see now if he can come back from it and try to bounce back and be the Gostkowski that we've always known. But, oh, gosh, Jimmy, I don't know that I've ever felt that way for an athlete anywhere. I can't remember anything like that. For somebody who has been that good, I don't know that I've ever quite felt that badly.
What did you think of Vic Fangio's clock management late?
Well, I think he's like a lot of guys who were defensive head coaches, who are defensive coaches who are now head coaches. There is a reluctance in those guys to admit you're going to score, because they're saying in their mind, and this is not every one of them, but I think it's a lot of them. We saw Belichick do this in the Super Bowl against Seattle where Malcolm Butler had the interception, remember? He let the clock keep winding down because there's a feeling that it puts pressure on the offense and that you hold the lead, so don't give them any help. I don't buy that. You know, I really don't buy that. I think what you do in those situations, for my money, is I think you're using timeouts, because I think – especially there, and especially the fact that we could just take a 2-point lead is a big deal. Listen, if Denver has 30 seconds instead of 17 seconds, they've got a great shot to win that game with a 55 or a 60-yard field goal. And I watched their kicker in warmups, McManus. He was hitting the top of the net from 55 yards away. I mean, he was bombing it. I don't think he could have tried a 74-yard kick, but could he have tried a 60 or 65-yard kick? Absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, I understand the second guessing on that. I really do. And, for the Bronco fans, I get where they would feel hard toward their coach about that.
How do you think Jadeveon Clowney played?
Played well early, showed up early. I think he kind of ran out of gas, which was not surprising. You realize he played 47 of 59 plays?
No.
I've been with the team less than a week, and he played nearly 80% of the snaps. But, I mean, you get it. I mean, you get it pretty quickly. I mean, early in the ball game, he was everywhere. And even when he doesn't make the plays, you see what he brings. And, gosh, if they can get Vic Beasley back and have the two of them on the field at the same time with Harold Landry, who played a wonderful game, I thought. I think they're going to be able to do something pretty special. I think in the second half, outside of the one drive, the defense played really, really well. I think they had either three or four three and outs. They've got a chance to get better, which is, to me, what's really exciting.
Our guest, Mike Keith, joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. And as you've talked about in the build-up to this season, Jeffrey Simmons, a full year in front of him, he was pretty special on that fourth down play at the goal line, wasn't he?
Yeah, he really was, John. I mean, to see him, you know, Dave McGinnis likes to talk about Mean Joe Green, and Joe Green coached with him. And when they would go out and look at players, he would say, Coach Mack, anytime we can get a bear who plays on two legs, that's what we want. And when you see, you know, when you see some of these guys play this game, they look like grizzly bears, right? I mean, they just like, where did like a horrible image of this gigantic man coming through, and what are you going to do? You can't stop him, right? That's
right.
What this guy looks like. And that's how Coach Mack described him coming out of Mississippi State, that he is the type of player that when Joe Green was his defensive line coach, you know, Joe Green kind of fit that mold too. When Joe Green was his defensive line coach, that's what he wanted. He said, if you could give me a couple of those, I can do anything. And on that one play, I thought it was a pretty good call, because I thought Locke was going to try to run it in, and I thought he waited until exactly the right moment to pitch it, and who's there? This gigantic grizzly bear just waiting on him. And, I mean, that was it. That was and if he's not there, if it's just a normal dude, it's probably a touchdown. Instead, play over. And like him running to the ball to recover the fumble by Gordon, like anybody's going to get that ball away from him at the bottom of that pile? No chance. No chance. But how far did he have to run to go get the football? That's what you really love in defensive linemen, is when they have that mindset. He's going to be a wonderful player, and I think he's going to get there in a big hurry.
That's Mike Keith with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break. Another segment with Mike coming up as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Tell the truth. Isn't this better than hearing Boston's More Than a Feeling for the 10,000th time? 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Our guest, Mike Keith, the voice of the Titans, as he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline. And, Mike, you talk about great performances. What was it like to see Corey Davis healthy and helping out the Titans' offense as he had more than 100 yards in receptions?
You know, John, he's not healthy. That's the amazing part. He's on the injury list today with a hamstring, and they worked him out before the game. They didn't know if he could play. And so for him to go out and do what he did based on the fact that he's still not 100%, it's a really special thing. And it's a special thing if you know him and you know how hard he works, and you kind of understand what's going on right now with the, you know, he's in the last year of his original contract. There's obviously going to be a lot of pressure about that. There's certainly been a tremendous amount of discussion about A.J. Brown, and there should be A.J. special. Corey is a professional. He's a really hard worker. He's a good dude. And so you're always happy to see that. And when Coach Vrabel had a chance to give him a game ball, he was thrilled to do it. So very good news for the Titans all the way around. Guy's a good player. And he's had a lot of things go wrong. Obviously, being the fifth overall pick in the draft, you're held to a different standard. I get it. And he gets it too. He has not put up, you know, those kind of numbers, which you would hope when you pick a guy that high he has. But he's played well. And if he could have the kind of year where maybe he could be that 1,000-yard receiver, it would be a really special thing. I think his teammates were just elated for him with the way the game went and the way he came through, especially with some contested catches. You know, that Broncos secondary is pretty doggone good. That's, as a defense, that's a good football team. And I think if they get good play from their offensive line, as they get weapons back and figure things out, you know, Broncos have a chance to have a nice year. And they're especially good in the secondary right now. So when you win against those kind of players, that's a big thing.
Mike, I'm going to go out on a limb and say I don't think you've ever delivered a baby like Kevin Byard. Would that be correct?
That would be correct, yes. I was in the room twice, but no, I didn't.
Yeah. No. What an incredible story that is.
Yeah, that's a lot. I mean, that just – Kevin Byard is all pro in a lot of different ways, isn't he? I'm not surprised. I mean, he's that kind of guy. Byard, we met him at the Senior Bowl, and he immediately became one of our very favorite humans because we had this huge problem that night. At the Senior Bowl, they used to have us do interviews outside at the port in Mobile. Well, the problem with that is, you may know this, especially seeing the weather today, the wind really blows in Mobile a lot, even when there's not a tropical storm or a hurricane. So we did this interview with him, and it was a disaster. I mean, you can't hear him. You can't hear us. We said, hey, can we move around a little bit? This thing's just not working. And he was as patient and as nice a guy. And he stood there and talked to us. He was interested in what we had going on there. And you meet some people in this that are just different sorts of individuals. And to see Byard, to see us draft him, to see him go on to be a great player, but to also see, you know, he's the spokesperson for the United Way of Middle Tennessee. He's one of our team leaders in every certain way. So, yeah, I mean, if you told me there were any player on the team who did that and you had me guess the player, it would be him.
What are your thoughts on Baker Mayfield? Didn't play well in the first game, didn't have a good second year in the NFL. What do you think of him as far as an NFL quarterback?
Well, I think it's too early in week one because – I think a team like Cleveland is going to have a problem in week one because you're playing Baltimore. That's enough of a problem. But right. The other part of it too, Jimmy, is a team with a new coach, new offensive coordinator, new this, new that. Those teams are really going to suffer because of the offseason, the training camp, and no preseason games. I thought every team that was in that situation, you know, for the most part, was at a disadvantage. And I think it showed there. I still think Cleveland has a chance to have a good team. And I'm still a fan of what Baker Mayfield does. I think he's a really good player. So I always say about week one of the NFL, it's a tease. Week two will tell us more. And if I'm not mistaken, they play Thursday night against Cincinnati.
Right? Yes.
So I'll be interested to see how they bounce back. Because here's the thing. If they win and they're 1-1, then oh well. You know, the national narrative is going to be they lost by 32 points to Baltimore, and, you know, they're horrible. But guess what? Baltimore was 14-2 last year. They may be the best team in football. And it's this early in the season.
If you would, Mike, update us. Looks like there is the potential. We could see an amendment or a change in when fans might be able to perhaps get their first look at the Titans in person.
Yeah, there feels like there's some optimism. I know the media outlets in Nashville have reported that we may get some good news tomorrow. Until Mayor Cooper says it, I won't totally believe it.
Yeah.
But we play three home games in a row in October, and the feeling has been building in terms of optimism that we will get to have fans there. And I got to tell you, the no fans thing is really weird. That's one of the weirdest things I've ever been through in sports. So my hope is we get that news. We've been working on a safe stadium plan for weeks, and the mayor has been aware of that. His health department folks have been made aware of it. We got some good news in Nashville last week, and we dropped below that threshold that they were worried about in terms of number of cases per 100,000. So that was, you know, things have now trended the right way. So I'm hopeful that those reports are true and that we're going to get to host fans in October, because we're not getting to host fans this weekend against Jacksonville, and it's just going to be wacky, guys.
It will be, but you do host the Jaguars with first place in the division on the line, so there's that.
There is that, and we like playing the Jaguars, and they like playing us because we don't like one another, and so that makes it really fun. It'll be a scrap. We know that. Garner Minshew tore us up last year down there when we played against him. He did not play against us in Nashville. They played Nick Foles in that game. So he's 1-0 against us, and we've got our work cut out for us taking on this Jags team that I've said consistently I don't think is nearly as bad as what people have been making them out to be, particularly with what they have on defense. I think they've gotten rid of a lot of malcontents. I think they've still got some really good players. And I think life is a lot happier in Jacksonville right now. Indianapolis certainly suffered the consequences of that the other day.
That they did. Hey, Mike, thank you so much for making time for us today. And no doubt about it, congratulations on the win. Good luck to the team, and have a great call this weekend. And we'll talk to you next Wednesday.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
That's Mike Keith, the voice of the Titans, joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. We'll get a break. When we return, we talk college football with our friend Barry Trammell of the Oklahoman. That's next on Sports Talk on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Hey, I'm Ball for Life, Bobby Scott, and we're counting it down. It's just 10 days until...
It's football time in Tennessee!
This Sports Radio WNML countdown to kickoff is brought to you by Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Find out more at tvacreditunion.com.
Go Hawks!
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson, and we look forward to, in mere moments, catching up with our dial tone friends. We are looking forward to catching up with our good friend, Barry Trammell of the Oklahoman. Jimmy, he has joined us through the years, and we would have talked to Barry already about Tennessee playing Oklahoma, but we all know that didn't happen this year, but always great to catch up with him as he'll give us the lowdown on what's going on in the Big 12. And goodness, after last weekend, a lot of questions about the Big 12, don't you think?
Yep, a lot of questions about the Big 12. Of course, there's not much question about the quarterback at Oklahoma. My goodness, Shane Rattler. Both quarterbacks were great. I think both of them were 14 of 17. But the Big 12 going 0-3 against a Sun Belt? Wow, that's pretty embarrassing. That's one of the worst weekends the Big 12's had in a while. Do want to mention this quick note. Tennessee has got a tight end that's entered the transfer portal, Jackson Lowe. He was a four-star signee. He is the first scholarship player this season to enter the transfer portal for Tennessee. So Tennessee apparently losing Jackson Lowe, who is in the transfer portal.
And let's go to the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline, as it's always a pleasure to say hello to our friend Barry Trammell of the Oklahoman as he joins us now. Barry, how are you?
I'm doing well, guys. How's things in Knoxville?
Well, happy to say everything on track in terms of Tennessee hopefully opening the season a week from Saturday night at South Carolina with a 7:30 kickoff. What was it like to see the season in your neck of the woods get underway this past weekend?
Well, it was a little strange with, about one quarter of the stadium with people in it. No marching band, no traffic. Mm-hmm. I actually live in Norman. I parked about two blocks from the stadium, and I live 3 or 4 miles from the stadium. It took me 11 minutes from my house to being parked, which is what it takes on a Tuesday afternoon. So,
wow.
it was not your typical game day, but it was sort of fun to have real football and, there's a decent atmosphere. I assume what's Neyland Stadium going to be about 25% or so?
Yeah. Yes.
Well, I think 25,000 Vol fans can still make some noise and provide some energy. So I assume that that'll be the case in the SEC as well. So it's very strange and very new, unique. But, you know, I think people are going to be excited when it hits.
When it comes to the fans' perspective, how did they handle just the new restrictions in place, the limited access, no tailgating, different things like that? What has been the locals' reaction to the new scope or the new landscape, I should say, of game day?
Well, they moved off campus, you know, private property to do some tailgating, but it was much, much reduced. You know, the masks, they ran about 50-50 in the stadium, people wearing masks like they were supposed to. You know, I don't know if it's – they sort of got an admonishment after the game from OU officials. We'll see if anybody does better. But, you know, people were somewhat complicit. And, you know, the whole nature of the game in terms of very few people on the field, the sidelines were very, very thin. That was unique. The extended team – areas go, I think, to the 15 instead of the 30 now. So it was all just sort of a surreal atmosphere, but most people tried to make the best of it.
Barry, Shane Rattler goes 14-17. Do you think that he can be as productive as Mayfield and Murray and Hurts were in the previous three seasons?
Oh, probably. He looked really good. No, he wasn't. He was playing a team that's not real legitimate in terms of, of competition. So I don't really count it, but he can zip the ball. I would say that he throws the ball better than Hurts, and his arm strength was just as good as Mayfield's, it looked like. Murray could really throw it. He moves really quick. He's got more mobility than Mayfield, I would say. Now, he's got nowhere near the strength of Jalen Hurts. You know, Jalen Hurts didn't have to get away from you. He could bounce off of you. Spencer Rattler will bounce off nobody. So he looks like a really good quarterback one game into his era. So I think he's probably got a pretty bright future. Lincoln Riley has a great track record of developing quarterbacks, and so I think he'll probably have a great season and a great career.
How surprising was it to you that the Big 12 went 0-3 against the Sun Belt with Louisiana Lafayette, Arkansas State, and Coastal Carolina beating Iowa State, Kansas State, and Kansas?
We got a heck of a league out here, don't we? Listen, you guys there in the SEC, you better be glad there was no non-conference for you, because let me tell you what, we just wiped the floor up with the SEC this year. We're crying out loud. It was embarrassing. It was ridiculous. Here's the deal. Lafayette's not a bad team. Arkansas State's not a bad team. They're capable of an upset. But for all three of those Sun Belt teams to come in and beat the Big 12, that just sort of shows a couple things. One, it shows you the Big 12's status is not – once you get past Oklahoma and maybe Texas and Oklahoma State, it's not a very deep league. It also shows you that it's a wild and wacky year, and all kinds of things can happen. All kinds of situations are developing with travel, with practice, with preparation. You know, this could be the year for strange upsets. We'll see how it plays out when all the conferences start playing each other or conference games. But to me, it was a potential warning sign that, hey, we could see more upsets than usual. You know, I know Oklahoma was missing, at least 12 contributors, including several offensive linemen in that game the other night. And, you know, if they were playing a legitimate team, that could have been a problem. And so if that happens to you, you sort of, you know, you could be susceptible against a team even that you're heavily favored against. So I think we might see more of that, but still, it was very embarrassing for the Big 12 to go 0 for the Sun Belt.
What was your reaction, Barry, to Coach Riley saying that he was not going to share specific COVID information in terms of what players are quarantined or who might have it? He thought that would put him potentially, or put Oklahoma potentially, at a disadvantage. Do you think that's the same as an injury report?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't expect him to. Once the season, OU has been really forthcoming with COVID numbers and all that. But once the games got here, I thought they'd clam up. They're football coaches, for crying out loud.
Yeah,
that's just what they do. So, you know, Chinese water torture couldn't make them tell you whether a guy's got a hamstring or a sprained ankle. So they're not going to tell you that stuff. I don't know why anybody thought they were. A lot of people around here got all fired up in the media, but to me, it was clear that was going to happen. So, football coaches are paranoid by nature, and they're not, you know, they're not going to change because of the pandemic. So, you know, they just believe that the less information they spread, the better. So, I think you'll see that across the board throughout college football.
Oklahoma obviously has been a regular participant in the college football playoff. Who do you think provides the biggest challenge, or which teams provide the biggest challenge to the Sooners potentially returning to the college football playoff this year from the Big 12?
Well, it's Oklahoma State and Texas. You know, I had Iowa State. Most people did in that group as well. Mm-hmm. But they looked somewhat inept. Brock Purdy did not look like an exceptional quarterback Saturday for the Cyclones. Now, they start slow historically, so maybe that's part of it. But Texas and OSU are the ones to look out for. Texas is, you know, the eternal optimistic program, thinking they're back. I don't necessarily think they are, but they do have a four-year veteran quarterback in Sam Ellinger. They do have some ball players. They might be able to get something done. But Oklahoma State's got 9 or 10 starters back on defense. They got all their big weapons on offense. They got their quarterback returning, Spencer Sanders. They've got the All-American tailback, Chuba Hubbard. They've got a Biletnikoff runner-up from 2018. Tyvon Wallace is back from a knee injury. So they got all kinds of weapons. So they're capable. But until somebody actually beats the Sooners, it's a little bit like Clemson in the ACC and Ohio State in the Big Ten. Don't get too optimistic that anything's going to happen until it actually does.
Barry, are you glad to see that the Big Ten is at least trying to play? They've got a target date of October 23-24. Are you glad to see that they appear to be back in action?
Oh, I'm mainly glad that they're back in action just because I'm tired of hearing about it. tired of hearing from Ryan Day and James Franklin and Scott Frost and all that crowd. But it's, you know, it's good. Let's see, they're going to start the 24th, which means they play every Saturday through the 12th of December and then go to a title game. They could get in 8 games.
Yeah.
You know, if their champion has 9 games in, you know, that's probably enough to consider them for the playoff. I think the SEC and the Big 12 and the ACC will be fortunate if they get in all their conference games. You know, here in the Big 12, we've had 10 games scheduled. It's 10 games scheduled September 12th. We got seven of them in. We had one postponed. Oklahoma State Tulsa was postponed to this Saturday. SMU TCU was postponed to a future date, which may not be made up. And Baylor Louisiana Tech was basically canceled, and Baylor hurriedly scheduled Houston. So, you know, the idea that everybody's going to get their games in, probably not going to happen. If the Big Ten can, then that's great. Now, if they lose a week or two, you know, I don't know that you can put a 6-1 Ohio State in the college football playoff. Maybe you can, but you know, it seems like 8 games, 9 games. That's sort of the minimum. You get much below that, and you got a I don't know, a 9-2 Georgia or something sitting over here. I don't know that the playoff committee could pick a 6-1 Ohio State over a 9-2 Georgia. So I think the key for the Big Ten is going to be getting all their games in if they want to be part of the playoff.
Barry, always appreciate your time. Before we let you go, were you surprised at all to see Billy Donovan and the Thunder part ways?
Yes, I was. It makes perfect sense. But I was still surprised. I got to believe Billy has another job already lined up. He clearly does not want to go back to college. He wants to continue to coach in the NBA. He did not want to be a part of a rebuild. A rebuild could be coming in Oklahoma City with the Thunder. We'll see. But I don't think you leave a job that's historically a pretty good job with a very stable franchise hoping you'll get another one. So I think he's probably got another job lined up, perhaps in Chicago. Don't know for sure, but we'll see. I thought Billy might decide to stay here and be a long-timer with the Thunder. I think the Thunder wanted him to stay, mm-hmm. but he clearly wanted to go someplace that was for sure going to go all in on trying to contend next season.
How did you think he did this year? I thought it was one of his better jobs.
He did a very good job. They overachieved. They won a bunch of close games. The previous 2 years, when he had Westbrook and Paul George together, I didn't think the finished product was all that good. I thought the Thunder underachieved. But this year, they clearly overachieved. The Vegas over-under was 32.5 wins, and the Thunder won at a rate of 50 victories. Now, of course, it was less than that because the season was condensed, but it was basically a 50-win team that was predicted to win 32. So, you know, that's an excellent performance. He did a very good job this year. He's a good coach. He's not a great coach in the NBA, but he's a good coach. And there aren't many great coaches. So he's a guy that can help you win.
Barry, you're always a great guest for us. We thank you very much for your time, and we look forward to checking in with you a little bit further down the road.
All right, see you guys later.
All right, thank you. Barry Trammell of the Oklahoman joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. We'll get a break and be back with a final segment to hour number two of Sports Talk as you listen to 99.1 The Sports Animal.
If it weren't for sports,
we'd be forced to play that crap other stations play.
Anybody need that?
Nobody.
99.1 The Sports Animal.
Final segment to hour number two of Sports Talk with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Jimmy, the football conversation continues, and we jump back to the National Football League to start next hour. So much to discuss with John McClain, isn't there?
Yes, we love having John McClain on. Nobody's better connected to the NFL than John McClain, so we've got a lot of things to throw in his direction. John, by the way, I wanted to mention this. As far as the Lady Vols, I said they were playing. They had been scheduled to play somewhere, and they moved it. They were going to be in the Cancun Challenge, and that's been moved to Melbourne, Florida, which is East Florida State College. But I don't even know if they're going to play that event since of the COVID situation. We don't know when the start of the season is going to be. So that's still up in the air. And, oh, I can't believe this. UConn, Therese Martin has been granted a waiver. He's a transfer from Rhode Island. Averaged 12.8 points and 7.1 rebounds, so he has been declared eligible immediately to go from Rhode Island to UConn. Man, they're handing out these waivers to just about everybody, aren't they?
Yeah, perhaps they could work in another video meeting or something to get more.
Yeah, they'd but, put their suits on, drink a little coffee. Yeah.
Yeah. Check out what's going on in the paper.
So we ought to send this to Trey Smith, get his reaction. Yes. From this guy from UConn getting eligible.
I think we know what it would be.
Yeah, they do.
I don't know that we could share it word for word, but we will get a break. John McClain of the Houston Chronicle joins us to start hour number three of Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.